That we are recording again. The continuing saga of Raymond March's scientific career, and I think we stopped, where did we stop at?
About 1954.
You just started with Polanyi?
I just started with Polanyi, yes.
Yeah, at the University of Toronto.
Sorry, 57. 1957, yes.
Okay.
With Polanyi at University of Toronto.
Now, obviously, he's had quite a reputation. Did that show at the time his brilliance?
Well, his father was well known, mm-hmm. Michael Polanyi. Mm-hmm. He also had Michael Polanyi's uncle. Michael Polanyi's brother, Carl Polanyi, was professor of philosophy at British Columbia.
Uh-huh.
And Michael Polanyi was at either Oxford or Cambridge, and I think is a Nobel Prize winner.
Oh, okay.
Michael Polanyi, and worked on unimolecular rate theory. So Polanyi had yet to make his own reputation, but he came very well connected.
Uh-huh. So you started a typical graduate curriculum with courses and then also working with Polanyi to come up with a research program.
Yes. Now, one little thing which I discovered later is that Polanyi had been very active in that first year in a musical called Spring Thaw. If you've spent a winter in Toronto, you really look forward to the spring thaw, THAW.
Uh-huh.
And he was involved in putting on this musical presentation. And he had, I guess he'd done that when he was at a National Research Council in Ottawa.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And he had applied to Toronto and McGill. At that time, those were the only main universities.
Uh-huh.
In Eastern Canada that had international reputations. McGill turned him down because of his interest in spring thaw and the thought he wasn't sufficiently well motivated.
Oh, that's interesting.
Toronto took him in, he took me in, and we set out to look at a pulsed photolysis program that would make rapidly, we really needed lasers, but we didn't have them, that would make a bunch of free radicals, and then at a later time another bunch of free radicals, and then see how they interact as a function of time. Nothing terribly complicated chemically, but the technique was interesting. So we had to develop TV tubes, television tubes, and fill them with a gas, and put windows on them. So we had a lot of fun with that. It was more the type of work that George Porter had done at Cambridge. George Porter had Porter. P-O-R-T-E-R. He had been awarded a Nobel Prize for flash photolysis.
Uh-huh.
He was, I think, quite a good friend of Polanyi because we saw him often.
Were you one of his earliest graduate students?
There were three graduate students. There was Ken Cashin, who came as a PhD student, already with a master's. He was a Jesuit scholar.
Cashin.
Jesuit priest. Cashin. C-A-S-H-I-O-N. So he already had his master's.
Uh-huh.
Then there was Sadowski that we've talked about previously. Chester and I were both starting in at the master's level,
uh-huh.
And then we didn't, in those days you didn't have to complete, you could convert.
Right.
And we both converted to PhDs, and then we both graduated in the same ceremony and walked together in 1961.
So you were basically the earliest of his
yes,
students.
Yes.
And this flash photolysis experiment was, you were kind of piling up on a flash photolysis type technique.
Yes, yes.
So how many years did that take to get going to this satisfaction that you could feel like you'd done, made some progress?
Well, 2 years, and then really settled down to some more results, and then to do some calculations, and Fortran was just coming in as a subject to be taught, and I had a choice of either using an electric calculator or taking the course in Fortran and working it out by, and I decided, no, I wasn't going to do Fortran. I was much better off with this calculator, and did it and finished, and that was that. So.
Okay, so you actually, this was the old, but kind of like a, oh, I can't think of the names of these things now, these calculators that they had at that time. They were like a Marchand.
You could like a Marchand, you could roll them this way or turn them this way, okay. Or wind them, and it would zip along.
So you did your theoretical work with an essentially hand calculator, rather than best with taking a
Learn
Fortran programming. So you could, it was probably, at that time, it was probably a good choice anyway, because you had to create all these card decks and
It was all too new. I got into that when I got to Trent.
So
that was fine.
Now by this time, you're committed to Canada.
Yes, but 57 I started. 58. I got a letter from my dear fiancé returning my engagement ring.
Oh.
There had been a kerfuffle over who should be invited to the wedding. The wedding was to be in the spring.
So you had planned for a marriage?
Yes.
Okay.
In the same church as I had been in the scout troop, and the youth club, and that's where I met Kathleen, and so we were to be married there, but then her parents were not very happy, and this came to a head, we would say, over the invitations, or the people to be invited to the wedding, yes, and in particular, a niece of mine. The niece of mine was a youngish girl at this point, perhaps 12 or 14, something like that. Mm-hmm. But she was the only daughter of my Uncle George, and my Uncle George had been instrumental, you'll recall, in teaching me Morse code and spending time with me during the war, when my father was trying to build and repair submarines all around. So she was very, very, very close to me, and so was my uncle and aunt, and so her father said no, and so Kathleen sent the ring back. So what do you do, Michael? What do you do? Letters take about a good letter will take 7 days to reach. So what do you do?
I don't know. You go back
immediately. Yes, no good writing, no good telephoning. Go back. Mm-hmm. So now my salary was you know, as a graduate student, was minuscule. The airfare, I think, was one third of my salary. Return airfare. So I went back. You don't put all of this in, but to give you the flavor, I went back, landed the same airport, went across from Glasgow to Edinburgh, down to Newcastle, took the train to the coast.
Now, this was the same 24-hour way back. It took as long to go back as, you remember when you said?
No, it had speeded up. Oh, we now had jet aircraft.
Oh, okay.
So it was direct, Toronto to Prestwick. That was a change in just that short period.
Yeah.
It changed. That changed in a short period, and then later the transatlantic ships died in a short period. Mm-hmm. These things happen very quickly. So I went back, walked through the snow. This was February. Got to her house, knocked on the door. Her father came to the door and said, "It's you." And I said, "Yes." I said, "Hello, I'd like to speak to Kathleen." "I'll see if she'll talk to you," he said, and closed the door.
Nice fellow.
That was the end of any attempt to be friendly. Mm-hmm. And so he was silly. An older man should have at least had courtesy, which I thought he was lacking. Anyway, as soon as Kathleen saw me, she was, "Yes." And that was a Sunday, and we were married on a Saturday.
Oh, okay.
Yes. There we are. Okay, so now I have...
You've got to come back to the States.
Yeah, now come back to Canada. Now, fortunately, there were no computers at that time. So coming back into the country, there was no way the immigration officer could look up and see if I had been... Was I due for national service or something like that? It was a risk. But there wasn't. So I got into the country and I got out of the country. I didn't go back for 11 years after that.
So you were actually taking a chance that if they determined that you still owed them 3 years of service, the conscription, that you could have gotten stuck back in the UK for a while. So
I was risking just about everything.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sure.
But so great was my love for that.
And then you managed to pay another arm and a leg to get the both of you back.
Yes. Yes. Kathleen, by that time, was teaching. Things went steadily better.
Yeah, yeah. And so you settled in Canada, back in Toronto, I guess, at that time.
In Toronto, finished. Kathleen taught in Toronto, got a regular position as a teacher. Toronto, of course, was expanding.
Oh, yeah. Still expanding.
And she taught at schools all over, particularly Scarborough area, that is the area to the east. A wonderful experience. And then she got a regular job. And then in those days, as it came to the end of the time, as we came to the end of the of the graduate time, I never applied for a job anywhere. Mm-hmm. No one in the lab, people would come and search you out. Hmm. People from companies, government, they would come and search. What chemists have you got about to graduate this year? They'd ask and come around and make appointments. Offer to take her out for lunch or dinner.
Yeah.
Or, yes, never wrote.
So I just back up a little bit.
Yes.
Why did you decide to go on to graduate school?
Why?
I mean, it wasn't really to get away from your military service.
Oh, no. I'd have enjoyed the military service. Had I gone in for 2 years,
3 years, yeah.
3 years I thought was a bit too much.
Yeah. But you knew that you did it, even at that time, the reason why it was too much was because you knew you wanted to go on education.
Yes. 2 years I could take. Mm-hmm. 3 years I thought was too much and it was unfair. And I had really been impressed by Dainton. Mm-hmm. And I had a very good tutor. He had huge hands. Mm-hmm. Huge hands. He wasn't exceptionally big, but huge hands. I asked him about this one time. And he had been a prisoner of war in Japanese hands for 4 years.
Oh, really?
And he had worked on the Burma railway line, and he was in charge of a group of prisoners. He celebrated his 21st birthday being in charge of a group of prisoners, and he was allowed to carry a revolver. The revolver was not to shoot the Japanese, but to shoot any elephants that came near and tried to interfere with the construction of the railway.
Crazy.
Yes. So that's why he built and so on for 4 years, and his hands were
But he was a prisoner of war?
He was a prisoner of war,
but,
yes.
And he was in charge of a group building this railway in Burma?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Well, he was in charge of a group of prisoners. Yes, for the Japanese arranged all of that. I mean, they're all in the prison camp. Prison camp would move. That was his responsibility, yes.
Interesting.
I mean, he was a graduate at that time.
And so he was part of the guys that you were working with at
Leeds.
At Leeds.
Yes, he was my tutor in physical chemistry. Wheatley was his name, yes. So I've been very much taken by kinetics, I mean gas phase kinetics, unimolecular rate theory. They were exciting. Exciting topics, and you began to see how you could predict reaction rate constants,
mm-hmm.
looking at all the translational and vibrational rotational modes, mm-hmm. and the change, and the partition functions that describe them. This was really exciting stuff, and the possibility of computing being able to help you was very attractive. Mm-hmm. And I had thought that Dainton was really quite a clever chap in studying chain reactions and things, mm-hmm. and he was a very good teacher, and he was enthusiastic. He had a little book on chain reactions, and, mm-hmm. and I've still got it.
So it's just the example of the of your teachers,
yes.
that got you interested so much that you thought that this pursuing a degree. Postgraduate degree would be the right thing to
yes.
do. And then you happen to hook up with Polanyi and the rest is kind of cool.
That was serendipity.
Yeah. Well, life is a lot of serendipity. I've become convinced of that with time. And so you're graduating from Toronto with your PhD in physical chemistry.
Yes.
People are coming to you saying, you know, we'd like you to work for us. So
yes.
You entertained various, shall we say, suitors from industry.
Yes.
From academia.
Yes. Government. Yes.
A whole lot. And they all were interested in a PhD in physical chemistry. To do something.
Well, this is shortly after Sputnik. You know, universities are beginning to increase in number in the Western world because with the Sputnik and the science race had really changed gears at mm-hmm. this point. And so people wanted to get hold of young scientists.
So you were a commodity in demand.
Yes.
But now you've got to decide you have a PhD and you still want to stay in the academic side of things.
Well,
or did you just find...
I was very interested in Chalk River. Chalk River had been very active in the nuclear development of the atomic bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And they of course, had the reactor at Chalk River and did a lot of very good work. World-class work, and so I was invited to go there into the physical chemistry group, and so took my wife up, and we were shown around. I was shown around and interviewed, and talked, and we were taken to the house for dinner, and the wife was telling us, it's a lovely garden here, but we have mosquitoes, and we have black flies, and there are bears that wander through. That was it. My wife wouldn't go anywhere where there was a bear going to wander through the garden. And she said, I'm sorry, I'm just too scared. I can't do that. So that was out.
Uh-huh.
So instead I went to work for a rather suave fellow at Johnson & Johnson.
Okay.
In Montreal.
So this was a kind of like a commercial operation.
Yes.
J&J.
J&J.
Doing what?
Very interesting physical chemistry, absorption, bandages, diapers, feminine napkins.
Uh-huh.
I know a lot about a lot of things that one doesn't normally talk about. And...
How long did this last?
Just over a year.
And this was in what part of Canada?
In Montreal.
Montreal.
Yes. Yeah. It was lovely. I mean, Montreal was a marvelous city at that time.
Definitely.
And I really enjoyed it. And I had an idea wicking away. That you have an injury and you want to wick away any fluids that come out, and there were various ways to do it, but I thought a good way to do it would be to make little holes and push some fine hairs through, loop them through. Mm-hmm. This is called needle looping in textile industry. Mm-hmm. And so I had some material, a roll of material. I had to take it down to New Brunswick, New Jersey, where they had a needle loom. Uh-huh. And they needle loomed some viscous rayon in. Uh-huh. And rolled it up again, and I brought it back. Had a bit of a problem coming through customs. They said, has it been improved? I said, I really don't know. It's got thousands of holes in it. Now, why did you do that? And eventually one said, where have you been? No, I've forgotten. It's just gone. Anyway, I got through with it, and this stuff worked very nicely, this needle little thing, and we started to sell, and they made quite a bit of money on this technique and some of the dress. But
so how was getting back and forth U.S. America, Canadian border then? Was
it no problem.
Pretty just, yeah.
No problem. No. It's very easy. Carrying stuff, yeah. They were just curious.
Yeah,
you know, is it any better? Because if it was better, they can tax me.
Oh yeah, right.
So that worked out all right. But I had been working hard at during the graduate time, mm-hmm. and now I had a job from I think it was 8:50 to 5:20. Mm-hmm. Well, 5:20, I wasn't ready to leave. Yeah. I mean, for one thing, there was a rush hour, and I had to get back over the Jacques Cartier Bridge because I lived on the south side of the river. And so I would stay and look at things like patent reports, patent lists, things. Go through them, and they. My colleagues didn't like that. They complained. So I got a little fed up in having to defend myself. So I went to listen to Dainton. Uh-huh. I told him about the lecture. He was giving a lecture at McGill, so I went to listen to him. And got on the elevator, and who should be on the elevator but not Dainton, but Polanyi, with this guy, Harold Schiff. And because of that, I switched and went to work for Schiff.
So, what did Schiff? What's it? How do you spell that name?
Harold Schiff. Schiff.
So, what was he doing?
Atom chemistry, glow discharges, microwave sources of oxygen and nitrogen atoms.
Okay, and he was at what school?
At McGill.
At McGill.
Yes.
So, he didn't just say, why don't you come to McGill? I mean, you had some kind of interaction?
Who are you? What have you done? What are you doing now? Etc. And he happened to be looking for a research associate. Mm-hmm. He said, we do this. Why don't you let's make an appointment and come. We'll have lunch and show you around. And there was somebody else working with him, a faculty member, but in the same group. Who actually had a mass spectrometer, a fellow called John Goodings.
Okay.
Goodings, G-O-O-D-I-N-G-S, mm-hmm. Goodings. Now, Goodings had been an undergraduate when I first started graduate work at U of T. So I went into year one of graduate work, and Goodings was in the fourth year as an undergraduate.
Okay.
So he was doing a project. Mm-hmm. So we saw him in the labs, the research labs. Mm-hmm. His father had been a graduate of Leeds in color chemistry.
Oh, okay.
So I had been invited my first Christmas to spend an evening with them, have dinner and spend an evening with them.
Oh, nice.
It was very nice, really very nice. I've been friends with the Goodings ever since. The dinner was memorable. Because his father decided to light a fire in the living room. Uh-huh. Now, this was, December. And they hadn't had a fire in the living room since previous winter. Uh-huh. So Margaret had the dinner going well. John was there with his father, and the pair of them lit the fire. Well, no sooner had the smoke started going up than the smoke started coming out. There was a creature had built the nest. Oh, no. The whole house was filled with smoke. Margaret, the mother, was just livid that they were messing up her dinner. And the doors had to be cast open. Of course, it's about, you know, minus five, minus six.
Yeah.
Windows open. We put on our coats and wait until it cleared. Oh, Michael. Yes, okay. So that was that. Goodings worked with him, as did a fellow called Dietmar Boma.
Is it you?
D-I-E-T-H-A-R-D. Dietmar. Bohme, B-O-H-M-E.
Sounds like a Deutsch.
Yeah, well, his father, I think, was a German ambassador to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
But and Dietmar was, in fact, an American citizen. But anyway, he was in Canada. He's been at York University in Toronto for years, 40 mm-hmm. years. So when I joined, we eventually got a sailboat, so the three of us would sail, and we'd have, Dietmar was at that time the graduate student, he's a big fellow, and so we put him as ballast. He had to keep us. We didn't treat him very nicely, but it was a lot of fun. Anyway, so that's how I came to go with Harold. He was interested in microwave discharges and these atoms. Now, Polanyi had been working on a relatively simple chemical scheme. He was A plus BC goes to AB plus C.
Well, yeah, that's about as simple as it gets.
Okay, that's pretty simple. Now, and hopefully there's a delta H here,
uh-huh.
An exothermic reaction.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Now, he had something like Cl plus H2 to give HCl plus H.
Okay.
So that has a potential energy diagram, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
This is the transition state. This is the HCl plus H atom. And there are about six, V is equal to six vibrational states
mm-hmm.
here. So this is a heteronuclear diatomic.
Okay.
It will absorb infrared radiation and it will emit infrared radiation.
Okay.
Unlike a homonuclear diatomic, which will do neither of these things.
Okay.
All right. So he then said, this is going to give us HCl, where the dagger here represents a vibrational state from 1 to 6.
Mm-hmm.
Will give us HCl dagger minus X plus H nu.
Mm-hmm.
So it's perhaps come from... It has done that transition.
Mm-hmm.
That frequency will tell us where it started.
Mm-hmm.
It will tell us the nascent distribution of products.
Okay.
The newly born distribution of products,
mm-hmm.
some which we don't know. And that was his contribution. He called this the molecular dance because it comes down. And there are lots of other systems, but this is the simplest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Harold was interested in simply the reactions of atoms in the atmosphere. So that was the connection there. I remembered this, and I had an idea that if we ended up with N2 here, so perhaps N plus NO to give N2. Plus, oh, that's the same type of reaction.
Mm-hmm.
We'd end up with N2. Now, N2 has a very high energy. That is energy of formation.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put it on a diagram here, it's about 9 electron volts if you go from atoms to the molecule. Mm-hmm. 9 electron, that's huge.
Yeah.
Huge. And so my idea was this will not emit infrared radiation because it's homonuclear. Mm-hmm. But if I can ionize it by electron impact, I should be able to look at the first negative system and look at changes due to the change in population of vibrational states. Mm-hmm. So that was a problem which I did later at Trent with a young lady who is coming to give us a lecture next week.
Wow.
And she graduated, I think, around about 1970 from Trent. But you see the connection running through. So this was Polanyi's work, the atoms were Schiff's work, and then this was Barbara Finlayson-Pitts. Mm. And Jim Pitts Jr. was the fellow who worked on the smog in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
Riverside. Mm.
Ah, okay.
Great hero in California.
Yes.
The House of Representatives closed business on the day he died.
Oh, really? Summer.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
So that was your first project when you started working with Schiff.
Yes.
And this was at
McGill University. So there are other interesting compounds like aluminum trimethyl.
Okay.
I had worked on metallo-organic compounds involving methyl radicals, because methyl radicals had been the radicals that I was producing with these pulses of light.
Mm-hmm.
So I had done some work on metal, methyl compounds. Type of Grignard compound. And then Schiff wanted to work with aluminum trimethyl because this with oxygen gives out this plus O2 or oxygen atoms gives ALO excited in the atmosphere. This you would see if you had a grenade and threw a grenade, this aluminum in a grenade, and you get excited lines from ALO.
Uh-huh.
And this would react spontaneously with oxygen or O atom if we sent it up into the atmosphere. And so Bull was interested in using this in his gun shots in Barbados.
Oh, okay.
So I was doing some of the basic chemistry of that system.
Okay.
Now, if we go from aluminum to mercury, Cl and also mercury dimethyl, very nasty substances in water.
Mm-hmm.
And where would you expect to find mercury in fresh water? In what sort of localities? Any idea? Paper.
Paper.
They used mercury in paper productions.
Hmm.
Yes. And it's lost.
Ah.
The water and then forms this, and then the fish eat this, and then the Indians eat this, the fish. And it's not good.
No.
So where you have paper mills, and paper mills are scattered all across Canada, and this is a general problem. So I have a colleague now in our water quality center whose main interest is mercury and dimethyl mercury in lakes and rivers.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a succession. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where were we?
Well, we were starting with Schiff.
Schiff. So with Schiff, I started doing this work of aluminum trimethyl and using microwave discharge. Do you know anything about a microwave discharge?
Not a lot.
Ah, well, very, very. If you take a microwave, but make a curled thing here. This is a hyperbolic shape. This is that shape, and then you put in a little point here, and then this is hooked into a microwave generator, and this generates microwaves. Now, if you take a piece of Pyrex tubing, Pyrex, because once the discharge starts, it gets very hot. And sorry, quartz. This is quartz.
Oh, yeah.
Quartz.
So I was thinking of you hot.
No, quartz. And then you put this, the microwave discharge unit, around it like that, and then just tickle this with a Tesla, you get a discharge.
Okay.
Oxygen atoms, nitrogen atoms, nitric oxide.
Oh, all that good stuff.
Yes. You can titrate nitrogen with nitric oxide, and you can get colored extremes. And the dark, where you have exactly equivalent amounts of nitrogen and NO.
Oh, okay.
So this means if you have a source of one or the other, you can begin to titrate the concentrations in the upper atmosphere.
Wow.
So the quartz, you can also, in this type of apparatus, make oxygen atoms, which with more oxygen will give you ozone.
Oh, yes.
And so we studied ozone and nitric oxide.
So this is all part of an atmospheric chemistry.
Atmospheric chemistry, yes. Yeah. Yes.
And that was Schiff's
forte.
Primary interest.
Yes.
Okay. So was there much of a, how would you say, concern about the environment then, the atmospheric environment?
No.
There is today, no.
No. No, Jim Pitts, well, I haven't come to Jim Pitts yet. I haven't even met Barbara Findlayson yet.
Oh.
So no, the problems of the environment weren't being tackled at this time.
60?
This is 1962 to 65.
Okay.
That's at McGill.
When did people start to being concerned about the ozone hole?
About the ozone hole? Oh, not until later. About 1985.
Oh, okay.
We had a conference here at Trent, and I was asked to organize it with another fellow, and then he decided to run for Parliament. And so I was left with a whole damn conference. And there was a fellow came from the Arctic Institute of the University of Cambridge, and I had to arrange for him to be interviewed by the press and CBC because the ozone hole had just been discovered.
Yeah.
So it was about, I could look it up, but I think it's about 1985.
Okay. So this preceded that by quite almost 20 years.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So how many different systems did you work with on with Schiff? Was it all those that you enumerated?
Yes, those. And then, of course,
the aluminum and
the aluminum trimethyl. That's trimethyl. This was for Schiff and for Jerry Bull.
Uh-huh.
And then the impact stuff was done in a place on Montreal Island. Actually, it was done in the Canadian arsenals, where they make gunpowder. It was done there. That was also for Jerry Bull. I gotta go and take a little leak.
Okay, no problem.
And,
it's
getting even more exciting as we go. Oh, I'm not too sure I'll last out the day.
Yeah. You were. How long did you spend working with Schiff at I keep getting confused. McGill?
3 years. 3 years at McGill. So there was this upper atmosphere work. There was also, there were also graduate students to supervise and assist. There was the work with Gerald Bull. We worked also in collaboration with the U.S. Air Force through Air Force Hanscom, Air Force Base, I think. And Hanscom Air Force Base.
What was that about?
Because they were interested in upper atmosphere chemistry.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of a scientist who works there now. Al somebody.
It may come, yes.
So this was really idyllic. Schiff and I lived close together on the South Shore. Goodings came, he was always with us visiting. He loved my wife's gravy, and he would have slice after slice of bread and gravy at the end. And the three of us decided to buy a sailboat, which we could sail from the South Shore. It's a little village, a part of Montreal called Préville, P-R-E-V-I-L-L-E. And we wanted to have a little sailing club, but then there was word that we were going to put a big highway across the thing. So we went to see our MPP, Pierre Laporte. He was absolutely charming. We had a degustation. That's a little wine and some nice things to eat and some talk. And he arranged for the highway to go up and over. He would put a road underneath, and he would actually have built two walls of dirt and fill so we'd have a harbor. They were constructing an island in the center of the St. Lawrence for the World Fair in 1967, and this work was underway at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was lots of trucks and things, and he could have this done. And it was done.
This guy, just because you three guys wanted to have a place to sail your
boat. Well, no, we had a boat. We formed a club.
Yeah.
You see, with the others. It was an English-French club, people in Préville. We had no problems with language or anything like that.
Oh, wow, okay.
We were all just interested in sailing and race under various conditions, and so Laporte did that. It was idyllic. We really enjoyed that. But this was all happening at the time of the FLQ.
The what?
FLQ, the Fédération pour la Libération de Québec.
Oh, yeah.
We were back into the terrorist times. Night watchmen being killed, bombs being put in mailboxes, dynamite hung from the Victoria Bridge, so they would close it, and then police would go along and cut the dynamite off and drop it in the river and open the bridge again.
Not nice.
Not nice. Eventually, it became oppressive, so I decided to apply for another position. I was invited to apply for a position at McGill, faculty position, but this was very, very unsettling. And McGill's situation was threatened. McGill had a lot of funds given by alumni and so on, invested funds.
Mm-hmm.
It was a well-to-do university.
Sure.
There was the University of Montreal, the other side of the hill, which was a town, provincial university with no funding from alumni, no alumni. So they couldn't. The Quebec government couldn't allow two universities, a French poor one and a McGill good one, and give them the same amount of money per student. No, McGill had to live off its investments until they were done.
Oh.
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
Smart.
Oh, man. It ruined it.
Yeah.
McGill has come back, but it went through a rough time. It was really, it had world-class people in a number of disciplines.
Yeah.
So I applied to Trent, and fortunately the president at Trent had been the faculty member in charge of Devonshire House at University of Toronto, and I had been a resident in Devonshire Hall at Leeds. So the Devonshire connection.
Okay.
Plus, Polanyi was a scientific advisor to Simons, that was the president, and so I got the job.
Uh-huh. But Trent was kind of an unknown quantity.
Trent was just, when I went for came for interview, it had only been open for about 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, university.
Yes, but I needed to get out of Quebec. The value of my house was going down because of the migration of particularly English people to Toronto. Property prices were falling, so I needed to get out, go to Trent, perhaps stay there for 5 years, and meanwhile look for a more permanent thing.
Oh, yes. An escape valve.
Yes.
Okay, take anything to get away from the situation that you were basically dealing with.
Yes, because I was losing my equity.
Yeah.
Didn't have a great deal, but losing it.
Yeah. So how long did the FLQ...
The FLQ, once I got to Trent, it became worse. Trudeau had to call out the military at one stage, and the FLQ kidnapped Pierre Laporte.
Oh, my.
And killed him.
Oh.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yes. Killed him.
So what did all this accomplish?
Nothing. Nothing. They also kidnapped the British High Commissioner, and he was eventually found. There were really dramatic scenes when he was released and into a police car and taken away, and the others. They bargained to be sent to be taken to Cuba. So the three French Canadians were taken to Cuba, and they spent, 15, 20 years there.
Hmm.
One came back and wanted to be a lawyer. He applied to be a lawyer. He was told on the newspapers, "You have a criminal record of the worst type, you see. There's no way you're going to be a lawyer."
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. So eventually there was...
So the FLQ even kind of followed you from Montreal to here, to Trent.
Didn't follow, but it got worse after I left Montreal. Yes.
Okay.
So Laporte and the calling out the military by Trudeau, Pierre Trudeau, was about 1969 or 1970.
Yeah.
And Pierre Laporte was killed at that. He had three children. It was a senseless murder, as most murders are. So that was a real shame, yes.
Yeah.
There was eventually a referendum, and it lost.
Mm. The referendum being...
For Quebec to separate.
Separatist
thing. A bit like Scotland.
Uh-huh.
Scotland have recently rejected, of course, any further separation. The only people, this is a joke, the only people who were in favor of Quebec separating were the people from Newfoundland. Because then they argued the drive to Toronto would be shorter once Quebec had gone. It was just a little joke.
Okay.
There. So here we are at Trent, a new university.
Yeah, this is quite an experiment for you.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Everybody else. Was anybody else? I mean, the faculty was being formed. Everything was starting up.
Yes.
From ground zero.
Yes. There was a mixture of older faculty. I'd say 50 and slightly over, from various universities who came and brought experience.
Okay.
And the rest of us had little experience other than through our graduate programs, undergraduate. I met up again with Chapman, who had met me at the airport in 1957.
Oh, wow.
And so that was nice. Just goes to one aside for a moment. McCowan, whom we met, I was an usher at his wedding in the late, about 1960. And then earlier this year, I attend the memorial service for his wife.
Oh, my.
And I was the only one from the wedding party there. But he had his career at Queen's University, also in chemistry, and we still keep in touch. Chapman, alas, died a few years ago. So here we are, some young fellows and women, and some older fellows and a couple of older women, and some people from the French and German classics. They're different altogether. And it was a great experiment.
I guess.
And it worked. Some of the things at the beginning I thought were very good, and some aspects were deleted later. The wearing of gowns, green gowns, was very distinctive. You could see the students all around. It was really civilizing. And then everyone had a supervisor of studies.
Okay.
That was simply, there was a formal registration. You had to approve the registration, and that form went off to the registrar's office. That was just a contrived meeting. There were three contrived meetings a year, and it worked very well, but the students, one year didn't like it, and so it was gone. It's never been restored.
Okay.
Well, the students lost on that. They lost the benefit of a lot of consultations on their careers, important, and just general academic conversations.
Yeah.
They lost out. There was nothing to replace.
So you say where they had, I mean, the students were wearing gowns?
Yes.
As part of their daily business on the campus and so on?
Yes. And when we had formal dinners once a week, the faculty would go to the residence of the college and dine with the students.
Okay.
We had our gowns on, and they had their gowns. My wife still has a green gown.
Oh, wow.
And she wore it a week past Saturday because we had a reenactment of a parade. In chemistry, we had to share laboratories, so I would make physical chemistry experiments on a board and on a structure, and then we'd hoist these up to the roof, to the ceiling rather, and tie them off at the side in ship-shaped manner, just disconnect them from the vacuum pumps and so on, and then physics would come in and they would go out, and biology would come in and they would go out, then it'd be chemistry again in this one. While we planned the buildings on the campus, so we were downtown here in an old school, and planning the buildings to take place. Yes, ma'am.
Hello.
Yes.
I've been invited out to lunch.
Oh, how very nice.
Rebecca's coming to pick me up.
So oh, how very nice.
That's our 20-year-old granddaughter.
Great.
Okay, so what are you doing for lunch?
Do you like lunch?
Sometimes.
We can go out and have some lunch.
That's good.
Yes, okay. Yes, we'll go out and have some lunch.
Okay. Well, I'm being picked up and we're going to the works.
Ah, okay. Well, better you than me. Okay.
She likes that.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Bring her in when she comes.
Okay.
Yes.
You don't mind doing this.
No, with a picture. Oh, yeah, she could bring in a picture at the time.
Bring
yes.
Pictures?
Yes. So, it was really quite exciting.
Who funded this?
Oh, the provincial government.
Okay, so there was enough interest, excuse me, because of the Sputnik thing that the local politicians the provincial government were willing to put up cash to get this thing going.
Yes, we had one at Niagara Falls, that's Brock University, Trent here, and Nipissing up north, Laurentian up north. Guelph was converted from an agricultural college to a university, Guelph University. And that's just in Ontario. My colleague, I mentioned John Todd, he was at Canterbury, And Canterbury started a year after Trent.
Okay.
And there were a number of universities in Britain that started in 1964, 65, and 66.
Okay, so this is kind of news to me.
There was a great university expansion, in both in numbers and, of course, in the number of students attending. Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so I think in the States there was more emphasis on science, but I think I don't think there's any that many new schools were created in the U.S. I don't think so.
No. Sociology, psychology, history. Thousands of students came to the university. Of course, the university experience of the Canadian population was very low.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one way of... This was a way to improve it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Even if a person went to one year to a university, and then either couldn't go on or didn't want to, went to business, they had that experience, that knowledge and experience of the university system, and therefore were more kindly disposed as a taxpayer towards it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Your alumni, love you. The yes. more alumni you have, the more powerful yes. you are, the more yes. secure your yes. position.
Interesting.
Yes.
So there was this really kind of a national expansion.
Yes.
Of university level education, just because of the Russians putting up the Sputnik.
Yes.
Pretty amazing.
Yes. Of course, it was the culmination of experimental going back to the German V-1 and V-2 rockets.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
both sides, the Americans and the Russians, both sides got some of these things, yes.
Well, Werner von Braun came to the U.S., that was
he's more American than
yes. So you were able to go ahead and get this thing going, the chemistry department. You had a chair, I guess. How many people did you have starting out in the department? A handful, I guess.
The department, a handful. 1, 2, 3, 4. Initially, in the second year, there were two there in the first and two more in the second.
Mm-hmm.
So there were four of us. We didn't have a department, structure. That came after another year.
Mm-hmm.
But we were more occupied in planning the buildings on the campus. Mm-hmm. The campus is about 4 miles north of town.
Oh, okay.
And if we have a chance late this afternoon when it's still light, I can zip you around there.
Yeah.
And it's very beautiful. It's on the Otonabee River goes through. And so it's a concave format. My friend John Todd, he's at Canterbury, as I said, and he is convex. The university is built on top of a hill, and all of the four colleges look down through the main windows at Canterbury Cathedral.
Nice.
Yes.
So it's really a very interesting national experience. Now, my understanding, when I was talking to Keith Jennings in the UK a couple of years ago, he was bemoaning the fact that the sciences are taking a hit, and a lot of the funding for chemistry and that kind of thing is going down. And also, from what I read in the news, the Australian government currently is kind of putting the kibosh on CSIRO and turning down. Reducing funding and all that kind of
yes.
stuff. So is Canada still on the upswing with regard to...
Just.
If not, at least it's a good, it's nasty. I got the impression from Keith that the UK is really taking a hit in the sciences.
Well, yes it is, but UK has a lot of universities. I mean, I've got 50 million, 55 million people there, and Warwick, where Keith was,
mm-hmm.
Was one of these new universities, started in 1960. I had an email from Keith just last week.
How's he doing?
He's well,
good.
He's well, yes. He favors river cruises to sea cruises.
Uh-huh.
So I may go and see him in March. I lost my thread now.
Well, it was about the change in attitude towards science.
Yes. So what is happening, I think, in Britain, and I know it's happening in Canada, is that the 15 or so major universities, those that think they're in the top 15, the it's all done in the soccer league, you know, those in the Premier Division really should get most of the money. And that's happening in Canada. I've got letters to the head of NSERC, that's our National Science Funding Council, and to the Minister of State for that, and the newspapers, because Trent is not one of these. And the 15U, that's the 15 upper universities, want to get all of it. They think only those 15 should be doing research for graduate students. That has, of course, dreadful implications for the other 45 or so institutions in the country. And that is NSERC, that's the Natural Sciences and Engineering Research Council. They give money and scholarships and things like that. We also have the CFI, which is Canadian Foundation for Innovation.
Canadian Foundation for Innovation. So what about, private schools? You know, there's a lot of private schools in the U.S.
None here in Canada.
No.
You're talking about private universities.
Private universities like
yes,
Harvard
no.
and Yale
no,
and
no,
Tulane.
No.
And,
no.
None of that.
No, none. Not one. I have two grandchildren who go to a private school.
Yeah.
In the next town. And actually, a week past Friday, Sarah and her mother went to look at Harvard. They had a tour of Harvard.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes, Sarah is very impressed by Harvard. But we don't have any.
So all of these schools are basically government, national government.
Yes.
Canadian government.
Provincial government. Provinces. Education is a provincial matter.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Science funding is a federal matter.
Okay.
But universities are funded by provinces. Researchers are funded for their money, research money, by NSERC, National Sciences, and CFI gives money for instruments.
Okay.
Now we have three masters.
Uh huh.
And our masters don't view us equally. So we get much. We're just completing our delivery of $6.5 million worth of mass spectrometers to Trent.
Oh my. Okay.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
But CFI has a clientele now, which is virtually all of Canada, all the teaching institutions in Canada. And NSERC is concentrating on just the 15. So they now have different clienteles.
Okay, let me give you that. NSERC, what's the Canadian National Science and...
Natural Sciences
and
Engineering Research Council.
Okay.
Makes Natural sense. Sciences... An Engineering Research Council of Canada, yes, NSERC of Canada.
Okay. So, yeah, it sounds like it's a recipe for some kind of, how would you say?
Revolution.
Revolution?
Revolution, yes.
So you're saying in the UK there's so many more schools.
It's similar.
That they have to. They're kind of going.
Yes.
Similar kind of.
And they had colleges. Mm. We still have colleges here, but they had colleges, technical colleges. Mm. I went to Rutherford Technical College when I was an apprentice. That is now a university. All the technical colleges became universities.
Oh, okay.
They expected equal funding. The government says we can't do that.
Yeah.
So now there's the elite, the Oxford, the Cambridge, the Manchester, the London, etc. that want the money.
Yeah. Well, being on the top of the heap is always, wanting the money. That's
and it's simple. If you have a university in a town which has a football team in the Premier League, they deserve the money. That's the rationale.
I see.
Yes.
We have sports in there after all.
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh my. Now, by football, you mean soccer.
Soccer. I mean soccer, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Let me get that clarified.
Yes.
But there is some Canadian American football, right? The teams.
Some Canadian football teams, yes.
So, okay.
Yes. And in universities. It's, but very few young men play Canadian football after the age of 17.
Mm, okay.
See, they leave school, go to university. University is much more selective. Uh-huh. You know, one team, not as though they run. When I was at Leeds, we had six rugby teams, you know, the first, the second, the third, the fourth. Wow. That doesn't occur in football, in Canadian football. And, of course, once they leave university, unless they get a professional position, there's nowhere else to play.
Yeah, okay.
None. So...
So you're starting out at Trent.
Yes.
What were the exciting, any exciting tales to relate about that experience of getting it gunned up?
Well, you have to work. We had to work with an architect, a fellow called Ron Thom, T-H-O-M. He was the university architect responsible for development of the campus, which is just up the road.
So he was like the major domo of the whole campus architect.
Yes, yes.
Okay, that's pretty responsible position.
Yes, yeah. And he put up some wonderful buildings. And I often talk about Ron Thomas' buildings because if you want to direct someone at Trent, it's very difficult. It's not easy. It's much better and easier to go with them at least part of the way and talk. Uh-huh. Whereas in France, the buildings, you know, are all like this, and this, and you can say up here, down there, and there. Here's my granddaughter. Oh, this is Rebecca. Oops. This is Professor Michael Grayson, dear.
I'm wired up too.
They're both wired up.
Hi, this is Rebecca Hubble.
Nice.
And she is just in third year at university here in Trent doing political studies.
Okay.
And she has a picture here. Now, do you recognize this fellow? Probably not.
Probably not.
He is, I need a clue, he is our Obama.
Oh, okay.
He's our Obama. Yeah. Oh, there we are.
Oh, yes. Well, he's in trouble then.
I think so.
Our Obama's in trouble.
Well, they're all in trouble.
Yeah.
What the heck?
That's amazing. You know, we have elections going on, and none of the Democrats want to have Obama associated with them now. And, well, it's considered a real liability because your opponent's going to advertise. So and so, and Obama, as a matter of fact, there's one Kentucky running against Mitch McConnell, a woman, who was queried whether or not she had voted for Obama, and she wouldn't declare. She said that's a person, that's private business. She wouldn't even say that she voted for him. So I guess an idea about contaminated ideas at this particular point in time.
Well, we're going out to lunch.
Okay, we have election day here. It's a municipal election day.
Ah, today is the day. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So it's lovely to see you.
Yes, ma'am.
You're not missing any lectures, are you? Today?
No, I'm not passing. Okay. I was just glad.
Okay.
Okay, good. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Enjoy lunch.
We're just talking and.
Yeah, we're probably going to take a break here, and it's getting close to lunchtime, so probably a good time to take a break.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
See you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Yeah, why don't we go ahead and pack it in since this is a nice break point.
Okay.
And then we can pick it up after the thing that's bothersome is we had primaries like early October. We got a bunch of other fun here.